this is 2023. No one opens doors for you. You run through them with hopeless abandon. Like, you just break down the walls. There's no rules. We assume that there's rules because we're stuck in this archaic education system that always puts us in our seat. You have to raise your hand. You have to be told that it's okay to go to the bathroom. Like, we have complete and total control, and people keep wanting someone that's like on top of this office that's smoking a cigar that's like, you, sir, you are good. That's not the truth anymore.
No.
And so, dear Lord, just like, do it yourself and learn from yourself and fail as early as often as you can, man. Youth is everything.
Explore the minds and marketing strategies behind today's winning brands and businesses. Tap into the power of the creator economy with Earned by Creator IQ. Here's Connor Begley.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Earned. Today, I've got Peter Hollins on the show. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Excited to be here.
And I really appreciate you taking time away from VidCon to come and visit little old us in this recording studio. This is awesome.
It's awesome to be here with you.
And I've only had a couple of shows that we've done in person, but it's different. It's a lot more vibrant. I dig it.
So how many has this been? Is this like your third or fourth?
So this is episode 90 that we're on. So just past number three.
No, but in person. How many in person?
This is only the second. Oh, no. Our first two episodes were in person. Then we did another one. So this is four, number four.
Yeah, you did call it.
Good work. So number one, we met online, which is awesome, right? I was creating content. You reacted to my content. It was like, hey, let's do this, which is amazing. Number two, I think what really excited me about having you on is obviously you're an incredibly successful creator and musician, right? But I think what you've done that's fairly unique is kind of bridge the gap between both creators and the kind of business side, right? The creator economy. So whether that's an advisor at Stir or Patreon or Creator Plus, you've got your own in-house agency, you've got creator education. I'm fascinated to know, what was it that got you attracted? Because again, you've got this thriving musical career. Like, what made you decide to branch out and do this other thing?
I mean, I think one of the best things about being able to scratch all of the itches, it actually truly allows you to go longer and longer without burning out. So as somebody who is so excited about an eclectic array of different things, being an advisor and being a consultant and investing in these companies was something that allowed me to then flourish external to the extraordinarily isolated world of being a creator and be put around these people who are so brilliant, and they're building something that is not about me and not about my face and not about my voice. And I would argue, whether it was getting like a viral song or being on Broadway, I really actually enjoyed working alongside these companies even more. It gave me more fire. And so I think they really went hand in hand. And I really hope that more creators lean into having a more of an eclectic career, because you can't be a creator forever.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it's setting yourself up for like, hey, eventually I might not want to do this anymore. And so what is going to come? What's my second act or my third act or whatever it happens to be? And starting to sow those seeds. It's a conversation I've heard quite a bit and a consideration.
Yeah, I think you can like keep at it a lot longer if you build yourself a team, you build and you hire for your weaknesses, you hire for the things that take energy away from you. But at some point, just like a professional athlete, you will plateau. And then as you are coming down and as that dopamine hit of that next thing and the next millions of views, as that starts wearing off, like, what else are you going to do? There's almost so much value that you can provide to the world, like from my perspective, for singing. And I think I can make people feel things, and that's a beautiful thing. But like, how much better is it to help people do what they love for a living?
Yeah. Well, and also just, it's interesting to do different things, right? It can get really repetitive doing the same thing over and over again.
Absolutely.
And especially, I mean, I think the way that the social networks work is they reward you for like the same kind of content. They're like, oh, you're really good at acapella. So we're going to prioritize whenever you do that, it's going to get more impressions, reach, views, et cetera. And you're like, well, yeah, but I also want to do other stuff too, right? Like, it's not the only thing I want to do.
That is a hard issue when it comes to the way that these companies have built themselves up. I was literally talking to Mr. Algorithm himself just at lunch. I forget his name, the only guy that YouTube even lets talk publicly about the algorithm. It's so fascinating that no matter what type of content you create, whatever it is that goes the most viral, that gets the most saturated, that is what those people know you for. And even though I would say that YouTube is the platform that productizes us the least, that actually gives us the chance to truly build a digital media company, no matter what, to your point, if I don't give them the thing that they like the most, they tell that algorithm that the content I'm creating doesn't have value. So it's very, very difficult. And especially as a musician, where you've been taught, I think, as a human, that musicians are a product, whether it's if you're a millennial and it's like the MTV world of like you see them in this music video, it's very produced, high production. that's not a real human to us. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult for me as a musician to pivot into something else because I'm more than just a voice. So to your point, yes, that's a huge issue for creators and myself.
100%. So one of the things I think is really interesting, and again, this gets to where I think you've got a really unique combination of knowledge and talent, is a lot of companies have emerged to service creators, right? So these creator tools companies, whether that's Patreon or a lot of the ones that you're an advisor at. And I know it was highlighted fairly recently in the information that a lot of these companies are now struggling, right? They've like raised a bunch of money. There's a big surge of enthusiasm, maybe called 18 to 24 months ago.
Yeah.
And a lot of those companies are struggling now to find kind of product market fit or to scale up. From your perspective, why do you think a lot of these companies are struggling? Like, what is it?
Yeah, I think it's on the macro level. I think we saw the end of this bull market cycle also correlate to something that we had never really seen in our lifetimes, which was this reality that we had never had, which was the Rona time, right? Where people were stuck indoors and thus like one of the only things that they could do as an outlet was to create. And so it extraordinarily rocketed our industry. And then you saw the A16Zs of the world come in and throw the billions of dollars in totality across the venture capital world and raise the valuations much higher than they deserve to be. It's true. And so prior to, you saw nice, steady, gradual growth, and then it was just like, whing! And then everybody either plateaued or started to come down. So if they're a VC-backed company, they're struggling because they were given a valuation that was too soon.
Yep.
Secondary to that, I think there's an extraordinary amount of, well, you would know as a past founder and CEO, there's an extraordinary amount of anxiety that goes into like, okay, well, when am I going to get to this next series? And how am I going to be able to hit the metrics and the KPIs that the VCs want so I can get the next amount of money or finally make it to a place where we are in the black and we are making revenue. So that's a lot. And we still haven't, in my opinion, actually seen a creator economy company IPO. And thus, I think we have a lot of companies stuck in a dead man zone. And I think it's going to be very interesting the next 14 to 20 months as I think a lot of these companies die, get acquired or dry up. And the ones that do survive are going to be the ones that truly thrive. And then I think we'll see many companies IPO. And then I think we'll be in a different place, whether that's due to deflation or something else. But if you want to talk about more nuance in terms of like from a creator standpoint, we can take that perspective too.
Yeah. From a creator standpoint, what kind of tools do you use?
Oh gosh. Well, you're going to get me into like AI talking land.
Have you started integrating that into your content?
Oh dear God, yes. Since the first day I had access to OpenAI's ChatGPT, I've been iterating both as a collaborator, the AI as a collaborator, and as somebody that helps me iterate on content and ideas. As I was going through my first extraordinary leaned into midlife crisis of like, dear God, I need a break.
It's only your first. You've only had one.
I would say I've been very, very fortunate due to hiring the right people that gave me passion when I was entirely jaded and lacking it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say I was very lucky that I got about 12 years in before I was just like, and I might have been the 4 and the 9-year-old at the same time.
I've got a 4, 3, and 1-year-old. So.
Oh, well, God bless you. And your wife and your
entire
family.
You can see it in my bags. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're a very handsome man. You look great. I truly am leaning on AI as much as possible. I am really looking forward to the time when I have my own personal AI that has digested anything and everything that I've ever done so that I can collaborate with the digital version of myself.
Interesting.
I have created multiple AI employees where within the confines of a prompt, you have the act as, and then you have the context and then what you want it to do and then the format. The act as, I have this Notion doc with like 70 or 80 employees where it's like, your name is this. This is where you went to college. These are your strengths. These are your KPIs within your company. This is what you've done. And then I like literally like act as, and then I copy and paste this huge swath of data. And then I'm like, wait for more prompts. And then I give it the context. Anyway, so I go for
what?
I go really in depth, really in depth. But the truth of the matter is that people are getting lackluster answers because you are not giving it a good question.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the breadth of human knowledge that has ever been consumed by this large language model and you don't tell it to look through the very small little window, you're not going to get the right answer. So yes, I'm using that all the time.
Prompt engineering,
That is literally my second monitor at all times.
No way.
At all times.
See, I think I'm like a late adopter. I mean, I know what it is. I played around with it a lot. I haven't gotten to the point outside of like, tell my kids a story, right? Like I haven't gotten past that or like job descriptions or...
Can I tell you how fun I... Okay. Father to father, tell my son a story. Okay. You go into your room and he's like, Dad, tell me a story. And then you basically like... put into the story the things of the day that like you wish that your kid would have learned, and they subconsciously tell it to them within the confines of like Disney and Pixar and this character, and then also don't hate your brother, and also be nice to your mother and eat your vegetables. Hey, Connor, I'm not done. Then you copy and paste that thing, all the while he's just sitting here waiting and getting in bed. And then you drag and drop it into 11 Labs through your synthetic voice, and then his father reads him the book.
Oh, wow.
While he leaves the room and goes and deals with the other kids. That is something I've been doing the last 3 or 4 months. And maybe it's a little sad because now he's gotten to the point where he's like, no, dad, from your brain.
I think when you start integrating either generated imagery or video, right? You can actually get to full video, like Mid-Journey or whatever. You can write children's books like that, right?
Oh,
like
absolutely.
That are thematic and entertaining. And I think actually the creative side of things is where I've been the most, I don't know, excited about it, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we'll see where AI goes over the next 10 years. Let's talk a little bit about you as a creator yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So one, would love to know, 2 minutes, what's your journey? And I know a big part of that journey that I think is fascinating was you listed the biggest mistake you made was signing with a major record label, mm-hmm. right? Because it slowed you down, you lost mm-hmm. control, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So one, give us a quick overview of how you got here, because it's been over a decade.
Yeah.
Two, talk about that kind of biggest mistake. And then three, what is your advice to other creators that are considering signing with a record label?
Okay, well,
yep. It's a lot.
All right, so I started doing the creator thing full-time in 2011. Similarly to how I taught myself recording engineering, I saw people on YouTube, the Boyce Avenues of the world. Let's see here, who else was around? Kurt Hugo Schneider, within the vertical of music. And I was like, that looks like a business. So I taught myself Final Cut Pro. This was Final Cut Pro 7, very archaic. And I started releasing content because I was already recording acapella music. Within the acapella genre, I'm a big fish in a small pond. Like the movie Pitch Perfect is made about my wife's group at the University of Oregon. Like the Bellas are the group that she started. And then we're like the Danny Sandy of acapella in the book. She's the first words of the book. It's like big fish, small pond. Anyway, I started releasing content, and luckily I never had like a big viral sensation, but I had some really great collaborators early on that had larger distribution, and I was creating a very small niche. And so I was always providing a lot of unique value proposition to my collaborators, creating something that their fans had never seen. And I would always do all the work, pay for all the pre-production, and then split revenue 50-50 from the first penny. So that within each and every collaboration, I always got rid of money from the equation. And so it was always about knowledge and sharing and friendship, which was really quintessential, I think, to my success. Lindsay Sterling specifically, this amazing woman, like electric violinist, she really helped change my mind that it was not that my peers in the creator space were my competitors, but they were my collaborators. And I think mm-hmm. the music world really fundamentally just forces the competition thing at you because of all the awards and all of like the Billboard rankings. Anyway, so fast forwarded to my second major label offering. My wife was 8 months pregnant. It was so much money. I was like, how can I not turn this down? And I accepted it. And very difficult. I don't know how much you want me to go into details, but I definitely feel like I've lost multiple years of my life due to that struggle. You know, they wanted to force a manager on me. No one should ever try to manage me. And they would never like take my calls and listen to what I wanted. And then even when I would go to the offices of said major record label and I would tell them what I wanted to do, they would just have everybody come into the room, take notes and be like, great, we'll do that. Every time I did that, I was like, I just consulted them and they are going to do that for all their artists and they're not paying me. And even though like I was able to like, you know, do lots of things to like make the contract look good, I was still stuck within the confines of this extraordinarily antiquated world where everyone else that worked there didn't understand digital as much as I did. And I was only a digital artist.
Yeah.
So by the time I finally got myself bought out of the deal and recouped, if you and I were looking at my analytics and like the growth versus when I got basically decapitated by said major, it was rough, right? What I would say to anyone else even remotely considering it is that this is 2023. No one opens doors for you. You run through them with hopeless abandon. Like you just break down the walls. There's no rules. We assume that there's rules because we're stuck in this archaic education system that always puts us in our seat. You have to raise your hand. You have to be told that it's okay to go to the bathroom. Like we have complete and total control, and people keep wanting someone that's like on top of this office that's smoking a cigar that's like, you, sir, you are good. That's not the truth anymore.
No.
And so, dear Lord, just like do it yourself and learn from yourself and fail as early as often as you can, man. Youth is everything. If you can fail while you have no one to support and you're living in somebody else's house, whether it's your parents or your friends, and you have the least amount of money to actually, like, I was paying $400 a month. Like, literally, we were living in someone else's house, and it gave me the opportunity to just be like, well, I'm going to stop recording other people. I'm just going to try this because this seems fun. And my wife was on board of me doing the dorky YouTube thing in 2011, which was not a thing at that point.
You were every not single cool person, back then,
I mean, every single person until like a couple years ago was like, how do you make money doing that? I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to answer this for the millionth time. Yeah, so that's how I got to where I was. And along the way, you know, I'm a very outspoken, unfiltered person, which attracted me, A, to the companies that I was providing value to. So the ones that I was able to monetize and get money from, I actually like would be like their biggest power user. And so they would eventually just ask me to join their advisory board or invest. And that usually worked out great. Either these companies would love me or they would hate me dependent upon my feedback, right? I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And then when I found the ones that I knew they worked, they had the right ethos, they were created by the right people, I would evangelize them to no end, which is truly the only way, in my opinion, that these companies can be successful is word of mouth through the creator economy is the most powerful thing. Because at least up until recently, there weren't that many of us that had control of the whole kit and caboodle. Now there's like just so many creators, which is beautiful because I think we're all creators. We're born this way.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a ton of sense. And I think to your point on the, this goes way back at the beginning of your answer, but this idea of collaboration versus competition, right? We see it in the data. So if you look at influencers that grow versus those that don't, they get mentioned by other people twice as often, right? And I think that idea of like, hey, I love what you're doing, you love what I'm doing, let's collaborate, share each other's audiences and grow together is like a really powerful thing that probably isn't facilitated structurally within a record label or others, right?
But
you can do, right? You have that control as an independent artist.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about burnout. Like you said, you have burnout in terms of I just get bored with something. And then there's also like, hey, this is really, really hard. I can always do more and more and more. But like, when do I actually stop? How have you found that kind of balance in your own life? How do you think about that?
I don't know how you can truly lie to yourself as a creator and say you have balance, especially if you have a family as well.
Yeah.
I think the initial burnout balance issue really coincides with, do you have a partner? Do you have kids? Then you're also a creator and you're releasing this content that truly is like, I would say almost as addictive as perhaps like, I haven't done cocaine or meth, but like the feeling that you get once you release something and you get all of that rush of comments, like that's very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in terms of like a more nuanced conversation in terms of the kind of content and what it does for you, like I always looked at it within a couple of different boxes. One was a very calculated gamified user acquisition model where I was like, check this box, check the cover song, check the medley, check the like gamification, check the collaborator, check cosplay, check like
thumbnail.
All these boxes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
thumbnail, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, all of the normal stuff. And that would more be like energy suck.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, there would be something that I had just loved, right? Like I'm a dork, like I got an opera degree. I'm much more of a Josh Groban-y voice than pop song or whatever. And so when I would do something that I truly loved, like a folk song, then that would give me love back, right? That would give me energy and light back. That wouldn't necessarily get me new viewers and a much smaller percentage would do it, but I would try to be very purposeful of like, holy crap, I need to write something or I need to do something that gives back because I'm dying. And I think I was really lucky that I've had the right team in place that helped me like pick and choose between where they saw that I was at and where I was at. But then eventually you get to the point where you're at your wit's end. And I lost my voice. I lost my voice for 18 months. And as somebody who found his actual identity through his voice, and then his entire product was his voice, and then there was a 7-figure business built on his voice, and all these employees and families of employees, and then to lose it, even though I had done a lot of due diligence in like, okay, well, if this happens, I'll have all this back catalog. And I had like 7, 8, 9 months of back catalog, but still just that happening and that feeling and having to go through that and then firing employees for things that like in my head and in my heart, I'm like, this wasn't my fault, right? Like I had surgery and that basically took me to empty.
When was that?
Almost 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And singers talk about nodes all the time, but something that isn't spoken about is something called a stubborn granuloma. It's called stubborn in the name.
Yeah.
It just doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And so even though as a father, think about trying to parent with not speaking for 4, 5, 6 weeks at a time. It doesn't work out too well, especially for the toddlers.
Yeah.
And then like the loss of identity, I found myself through my voice. And so that was just a storm. And I think I'm nearing the end of it by like taking a pause because I literally have like PTSD from it and not real like, but like coming even to VidCon again, I'm just like, who am I if I'm not currently actively releasing? I mean, because I released every other week for 12 years.
Yeah.
I literally haven't sang into a microphone. I haven't done this for 5.5 months. And so like I purposely saw it coming. I felt it coming. And so I was iterating on all these different business plans and business models with ChatGPT. And it gave me that ability to like focus on something that was different. And that's been fun and fascinating and a huge learning lesson for the first time in my entire business career, being the person reaching out versus the person coming to me and like, you know, like there's a complete difference between like you asking somebody like, I have something amazing.
Yeah.
I don't want to sell it to you versus everything else is inbound as a creator.
Yeah.
And then being seen as just a singer versus like, I actually have business acumen and I have a lot to offer. And these creators that I vetted have a lot to offer you. It's just a whole new world, which I'm leaning into with every fiber of my being, but I am fundamentally like just in it.
So where is your voice today then? How is it feeling?
Yeah, I mean, like I could sing you a song right now. It would probably to your ears sound fine. There's interesting thing as a professional singer when you know you're doing everything right from a vocal pedagogy standpoint, and then you're like, why is it doing that? And so if I had to put it like on a numbers perspective, I'm like 85% of what I used to be. And that sounds like, that sounds pretty good. But as somebody who would create a song with 120 tracks of his voice, the vocal fatigue that comes through that, like I was one of the most healthy singers ever. I never had a nodule and I sang more than almost anyone else that I know. Even my ENTs were like, you're crazy, dude. And I was like, it's great though. It keeps working. My range is big.
Yeah.
Now I don't have that. Yeah. So I can sing like any other singer. Like if I go and there's somebody else has laid all the music down, I can go and like do well on like a solo, but like that's not my digital brand. And that's not what I created. And so it's hard. And then I have all these people that only know me and want that thing from me, right?
Yeah. That's crazy. That didn't come up. I didn't realize that.
I haven't been talking about it publicly.
Yeah. It has to be incredibly difficult.
It is. The only other person that ever really did like the one person a cappella music thing, I had his family. His name is Mike Tompkins. He was on Ellen for doing it. And we had this conversation because he burnt out a couple of years earlier than me. And so little people truly understand what it's like to be a creator, have all those millions of fans, have that feeling, and then be like, and now what? And I'm like, dude, that's the thing I'm trying to solve because I experienced that. And I was like, I am worth so much more than just my singing voice. I know that I could go into a company and provide 3 million value. Why can't I go get a $250,000 job? Because I know my ROI to that company is tenfold, regardless, like within the confines of the creator economy and what I know.
It's a very small number of people that have done what you do. And it didn't have, yes, it had to do with your voice, but frankly, it had to do with everything else, right? The strategy, the editing, the plan, the whole thing, right? The community building.
So why couldn't I just go and get a job like that? It's just that transition isn't out there. And that's where I've found myself. I'm like, I want to build the thing that I wanted and needed to have 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
Question is, why work for them? Why not work for the creators themselves? That's what you're really good at. If you can go to other creators and help them grow.
Absolutely. I don't see a distinction between being able to join the workforce between a creator's team and a business. I would argue that currently the creator side of the business, like the SMBs that everyone's been building for the last 4 or 5 years, I don't think it's matured enough to take in the number of creators that I want to create a job for. And thus, I think evangelizing it within the business community as a whole is more advantageous to be seen as a true value add.
Yep.
Because if you separate the distribution and influence from a creator that everyone looks at as a transactional standpoint and using us for that and just using us and bleeding us dry, what is really left within like the top 5% of business acumen, like leaned in creators, is a wealth of value and information. Mm-hmm. And I see as AI defines intelligence in the future in such a different way that the definition of intelligence changes from what you know and how quickly you can pull it out of whatever orifice of your body to like how creative you are and what a critical thinker you are and how innovative and looking through the lens of like, well, we can actually do this differently by doing, I mean, like literally how a creator has to adapt or die. Like we've built our entire businesses on quicksand. And now finally, for the first time ever, businesses are being built on the same quicksand. And if they don't hire us, they will fail. And I will go down fighting, saying that. And I think that
the ones that lead in will win, right?
Yeah, That's totally, of course.
Yeah.
I would like to go for the negative thing because that plays fear. Like, look at our freaking mainstream news now. I believe that you have these amazing minds that are like, okay, I've done this for a decade and now I want off of this ship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of sinking slowly. It's really fun though. They're playing great music on the Titanic as well.
Yeah, it's like not frankly dissimilar to the life of an artist for a long time, right? Like you get some degree of success. It's very difficult to maintain that over a sustained period of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the nice part is you're in more control now, right? You control your own destiny. You have your own audience. But that pending fear, like, I don't want to do this when I'm 50. I don't want to do this when I'm 60.
I think it also could coincide with, I don't think I could do this. I don't think I'm able to.
Yeah.
I started when I was 30. Like, yeah. It's a lot easier to attract people at 30 than at, I'm 43.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
It's different.
100%. Totally. 100%. Right?
Especially when you're living and breathing on a platform where my core audience is 15 years younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could talk about audience demographic and Facebook versus YouTube. And it's fascinating.
So let's talk a little bit about revenue, monetization, income, et cetera, right? And this is both, I would say, kind of where you're at today and then where you want to be at in the future. And I think some of this goes to what you were talking about earlier in terms of, should I go work with a company? What is my impact there, et cetera? But you also have this existing catalog. You also have this existing channel, this massive audience, mm-hmm. et cetera. How do you expect that to change for you over time? And how much of your revenue is like YouTube versus Patreon versus brand deals versus merchandise mm-hmm. versus the new in-house company
in-house
that you launched? Yeah. How does that all work out?
Sure. I would separate in-house creators as its own like Delaware
thing.
C Corp thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would say if I were to answer this question 2.5 years ago when I was still very active, I would say that ever since 2013, Patreon's been a very, very steady, like high 20s, low 30s percentile of my revenue.
Yep.
It's always been able to be the thing that like gave me that first, oh my God, I'm fine now. The first time I saw what Jack was building, I like went after Jack and Sam with hope. I was just like, you have to let me help. This is like exactly what I've been looking for. This is why I never launched a Kickstarter. Oh my gosh, man, you have to invite me down. You know, probably how I got to be an advisor, but. Then I think there was always digital and physical revenue of music. I built an entire company called Legendary Vocals selling physical albums to older white women in the Bible Belt, like hundreds of thousands of albums. I even sold other musicians' albums. And if Facebook and Apple wouldn't have gone to cookie war so I couldn't trace people back to their homes, I would still be selling albums, like this beautiful music. And that was great. I even was making more on physical for, I would say, 2016 through May of 21. When that separation of the ability to track on Apple devices happened. And then digital revenue is long lasting. I think one of the great things about being a musician, as long as when you're creating content, you're also simultaneously thinking about creating a piece of content that can be streamed across all of the streaming sites, the Amazon, Spotify's of the world, as its own piece of content that will live on. That's a great play. And I would always like stick within songs that I knew had longevity, IP that has longevity. You know, like you play in the world of like Lord of the Rings, Hunger Games, Star Wars, Disney, like you're going to make music that will be streamed as long as you're creating a unique one.
Yep.
Consulting. I try to get as much advisory out of like private shares versus like taking consulting as possible out of the companies that like I knew were going to slay it. So, and then it's public speaking. I tried to stay away from brand deals because like, man, it's just not fun. Like having someone else tell you how to make your content. I know it's a necessity, but I always looked at Patreon as my like continuous brand deal from my most like hardcore fan base that was all the way down the fan acquisition funnel that was just like, oh my gosh, yes, I love you. Here's my credit card. And I was like, I will keep really good care of this and make what you want. And like, that's what I focused on. Yeah, I mean, I always ignored ad revenue. I literally was just like, whatever. Because as a musician, I don't know, you know much about like content ID and being a cover artist, but, and I also did public domain and some originals, but like you give a lot of it away to the original IP owners.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing. They deserve it. It's their song. They've worked really hard and they've written it.
Is that true of your YouTube videos as well?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
So, gotcha.
Yeah. When you create a cover song and you file a mechanical license directly with the Library of Congress, or you can file a compulsory. Let's say you do a medley, you can file a compulsory for each one. So you basically like force that artist or that publisher to take your money. It's like 9.1 cents per every song that's under 5 minutes. Although that rate is getting upped really soon, I think like to like 13 or something, 13 cents.
Yeah.
That was back in like the iTunes download a song days, which doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
You'd have to be very specific. I was just playing the game. You just make more content. It's like you're an insurance salesman and you're just getting people to buy your insurance and then you just collect that on a monthly basis.
Totally.
You're kind of like, as a musician, you've already created your like, quote CPG brand because it's just exists and it's yours. And then even now, I think it's a very smart play for some equity firms. They're buying people's catalogs. Like a lot of my peers are selling their catalogs
Spotter
for millions
and,
of dollars.
Yeah,
No. Like music. Spotter does the YouTube side.
Yeah.
But like there's a lot of equity firms that go out and like go after this artist catalog. They're like, here's $3 million.
Yeah. For the next 10 years revenue.
Forever,
or whatever it is.
Actually,
yeah, or forever.
Usually
yeah,
they
yeah.
do that. There are some companies that do like the 5-year thing, but I will never sell my catalog. I want to give that residual revenue to my kids.
Yeah. So I would imagine right now the in-house creators is the thing that you're most excited about, right? It's your most recent project. Tell me about that a little bit. What is it? Why are you doing it?
Yeah. So to my early statement, after experiencing the loss of my voice and being like, I should be able to go out and work for a company and like work in a senior level position and be able to provide value directly to the C-suite. I was like, this doesn't exist. I want this to exist. And so it's one of the reasons why I'm doing it. I think the second reason is like, I do truly believe that the creator economy is maturing to a place where you have these business-minded senior level creators that deserve to be there. I think it's a foregone conclusion that any freaking company in their right mind should be hiring only creators within the in-house production side. And like, I could totally do that and like create an entire like site for that, but I don't want to do that yet. Like I want to evangelize the upper echelon and the value of these creators. And so I'm going through, you know, my long list of managers and agents and being like, hey, do you know anyone that fits these criteria, right? Like I have a very specific set of criteria. And then they vet that first filter. And then I get on a phone call with them. I'm like, what are you passionate about? What are your weaknesses? What are your blind spots? What do you love? What do you not love? How much time do you actually have if you were to do this?
Yeah.
Is this something that you would want? Like, do you want to have a new experience? Do you want to, for the first time ever, probably build your resume?
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
though to my feeling, what we've done online is our resume. Like that's my resume. Do you see what I've done? I've built numerous companies. I've built it out of thin air with no resources all by myself.
Well, you and just, imagine how many learnings you have to go through to get to that point, right? You're like 12 years into doing this.
Oh, totally. Like, I have so many failures.
Which otherwise, if you hired somebody to do that in-house who had never done that, they have to start from ground zero, right? They have to learn that on the fly. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Your history, and yes, you had an amazing out and congratulations. You're a total bad arse. But like, I'm not looked through the same lens just because I didn't have an acquisition, but I had multiple SMBs that I built. And so like, I should be able to go on LinkedIn and be like, I'm a 4X founder and of X multiples, but I couldn't then go to Google and be like, yo, I am an expert prompt engineer.
Really good at this.
You should hire me as like your senior level AI researcher who can immediately talk directly to creators as a creator, speak their verbiage, speak their language, and be able to help provide you an accelerated way to create your large language model that you are definitely building on your end with your very specific subset of data that you have that's going to be amazing. But that doesn't exist, right? And so I'm like, I want to build this out. What that is called is in-house creators. So I was like, I'm going to build in-house creators and I'm going to be a thought leader and I'm going to evangelize this. And that is worth my time, right? Right, Peter? And so getting to help these creators where they're like, man, if I could just make X amount of money right now, because like they were making six figures and now they're going back to Starbucks, they're going back to the teaching job. And I'm like, I know you would absolutely slay for this company.
Yeah.
And being able to place some of these creators for 2X what they even want, like, is such a good feeling.
Yeah.
And yeah, that isn't like getting millions of people to hear you sing, but like there's value there. And I just want other people to take this idea, run with it. It needs to be a thing. We need to have an off ramp. Just like sporting professional athletes get to go and seamlessly integrate into the broadcasting world if they're well spoken. And why can't creators have something that's similar, right?
100%. I mean, it makes a ton of sense. And I think in a lot of ways, it is a very validated and like hard to get part of your resume, right? Like I built a really big audience. I know what I'm doing. I know how to engage community. I know how to create interesting stuff. Like that has a lot of value to businesses, right? My expectation is the companies that lean into that will be significantly more successful. Peter, I really wanted to thank you for taking the time. Congratulations on all the success and wishing you luck in kind of next phases of your career and always here to support however I can.
Appreciate it. It's nice to meet you.
Awesome. All right. Bye, Peter.
Thanks.
Be a friend, tell a friend, and subscribe. Earned by Creator IQ. Creator IQ is your all-in-one solution to grow, manage, scale, and measure your influencer marketing program. Ready to unlock the power of the creator economy? Get started with a demo today at creatoriq.com.